This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. This is Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Innovative thoughts from baseball's best coaching minds from around the world. Brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. Now your host, former USA Baseball National Team Coach, Peter Caliendo.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the U.S. and around the world. All we know, we want to thank you for joining the show. It is a great pleasure having everybody listening to Baseball Outside the Box. And I'm your host, Pete Caliendo. Hey, thanks for joining us. One thing we want you to do before we start the show, we had one last night at 7 p.m. with our good friend Trent Mongero. Check that out on YouTube. Go to YouTube and do me a favor, the big red button, you can't miss it, subscribe, hit that sucker and subscribe so that way we can get the show out even more. And you get free updates on all the shows. We've got over 100 just on YouTube. The audio then goes on baseballoutsidethebox.com. As you know, that's been around 3 years. So go back and listen to some of those shows. If you like either one, please do us a favor, just share it. That's all we ask. And the shows are free. If you can share it, it just gives us the ability to get the show out to more people in the U.S. and around the world. Hey, we're up to over 100 countries listening to the show. So we are proud of that. That's not because of me. That's because of our guests. And also, we got great guests. We think we do. But also all the listeners out there. So thank you, everybody, for doing that. And today, yes, you're going to hear another Italian name. Not by accident. I don't do it on purpose all the time. I'm not trying to pick Italian-Americans, okay, folks? So please don't get on me on that. The reason being is because, all nationalities have great coaches. I just happen to know more Italian-Americans. So my good friend, listen, I haven't been in contact with him for about 15, 20 years. It's incredible what he has done in his coaching history. Not only, first of all, as a player, he went all the way to AAA. He was also with the Dodgers, a bunch of other teams. He was Team USA, playing the Panama Cup. Later on, he went on to play UC Davis, but, he was the UC Davis recruiting coordinator, offensive and defensive guy. Kept going, man. Now he's the head coach. Oh, wait, before that, he's in the UC Davis Hall of Fame, was inducted in 2010. He's now the head coach at San Francisco State for 5 years. They've been to, in 2019 and 2018, to the CCA tournament appearance. And actually in 2018, the first time in the history. So it's great to have somebody who has really climbed that ladder, been coaching quite a long time, and can share with us some great things. Let me welcome our good friend, Tony Schifano. What's up, Tone?
Hey, Pete. Great to be here. Appreciate that intro. Thank you.
Well, I can't believe, it's crazy because I usually try to stay in touch with as many people as possible. I can't believe we stay in touch and after rehire and everything, it's a thrill to see, how successful you've been in the game of coaching. My first question, and you could add anything after that. My first question is, after you got done playing everything, how did you make the decision to get in coaching? Why coaching? And what were your goals?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank God for Facebook, right? We were able to reconnect.
Yes.
One of your videos on here, and I feel honored to be on here. So thank you very much for that. My story is a little bit different. I played 10 years professionally, and when I got out of the game, I honestly didn't know what I was going to do. I had my college degree, and about halfway in the middle of my playing career, I started substitute teaching in the off season. As you know, a lot of pro guys have to work in the off season, mm-hmm. with minor leaguers. So I fell in love with the classroom, and the school that hired me late in my career asked me to start working towards my credential and be a full-time teacher. So I became a full-time middle school English teacher, then eventually a high school English teacher. And I honestly thought that was my path. I was going to be in the classroom, maybe eventually be a high school baseball coach. I was coaching some travel ball up in Northern California in the Los Gatos area and really enjoying just being in my early 30s and not kind of done with the grind of everyday buses and through Tennessee and the Rock and the Smokies and whatnot. I had lost a little bit of connection with UC Davis, just over those years. Just because I was gone so much, I wasn't able to go to alumni events, things of that nature. But the pitching coach, Coach Vaughn, who has been there, close to 30 plus years now, He was reaching out to me about my third year in the teaching, and I had just missed the golf tournament. And so I thought he was calling to ask for a donation or something. And so I actually ignored the first couple phone calls. I'm like, you know, money's tight right now. I'll get a donation out. But he called a third time. And I'm like, well, this might be serious. So I answered the phone and he said, hey, you know, we have an opening. We have an assistant job opening. One of our assistants left for St. Mary's College. And we had a new head coach at this time at UC Davis, then different than I played for. And so I didn't really know him well. And Matt suggested I give him a call and strike up a conversation. And little did I know that, you know, I was at the top of their list. And I went over on a Saturday afternoon and the head coach invited me in the dugout. His name's Rex Peters. He's now at UCLA as their hitting coach and has won a national title within the last 5-6 years. But, you know, Rex sat me in the dugout and we watched a Saturday afternoon practice in the fall. And little did I know it was an interview, an on-field interview. And it was
interesting.
Fantastic. It's actually, Pete, it's the way I do a lot of my interviews now. I bring candidates to practice and or on recruiting events with me, and I just want to see how they interact with the players and they pay attention, things of that nature. So it was an on-field interview, like, you know, hey, Tony, what do you think of that shortstop's footwork? Or what would you, that hitter, do you think he's getting started on time? Things like of that nature.
Wow.
Kind of asking my philosophy if I started recruiting, things of that, like that. And I'll be honest, Pete, I was raw. I wasn't prepared. I was just kind of talking off the cuff. And we went and had lunch, and little did I know, soon enough after he offered me the position to be an assistant coach and get on the recruiting trail. And I fell in love with it right away. I was very fortunate. You know, there's a lot of young coaches out there listening that are like, oh man, I had to do the director of ops. I had to do the volunteer work, you know, and I feel like I did that stuff for 10 years playing pro ball. You know, I kind of paid my dues in my 20s, but I do understand how hard that those positions are. And I have a lot of respect for those positions, but I was very fortunate. And I spent 8 years at UC Davis. We went to a regional. We had some tough years. We had some good years. I learned a ton about recruiting, building relationships, building a program from Coach Vaughn, Coach Peters. I became very close with Coach Christensen. He's the head coach at Sac State. Over those years, Coach Smith, that was the head coach before him. Larry Lee, Coach Lee at Cal Poly San Luis Obispo within the conference. I listened a lot. I listened a lot, kind of like I was as a player and I absorbed as much as I could. But then we'll get into a little bit later is you got to make it your own and you got to have your own philosophies and your own and own way to develop and build a program. And, you know, I interviewed, oh gosh, probably after year six at UC Davis, I interviewed for a head job in Colorado. There's a university called Regis University. And I went into that interview. I was down to the final two. I went into that interview, and this is a great learning lesson right here. I thought I knew everything. I thought, oh, why not me? I'm the guy. I brought a packet this thick, Pete, to the interview of all my philosophies of how to bunt, how everything. And I didn't get the job, and I asked the AD afterwards, you know, what could I – constructive criticism, please.
Sure.
And she said – Tony, I was exhausted after your interview. talk about a blow.
Wow.
And, you know, I realized, you know, and she told me, hey, you need to focus on, this is about the student athletes. You know, you're here because we already like you as a coach. You know, you can do the job. Your focus is how are you going to build this program and the student and help the student athletes get to where they want to be. And I learned a lot from that interview. A couple of years later, I had an opportunity to interview at San Francisco State and got the position. I showed up with nothing like that interview. Just myself.
Yeah, I was going to say that do the reverse. You know, you said English major, so I'm going to, you know, don't critique and review my talk here because my English is not the best. Trust me there. The other thing I love was the interviews on the field. I think that's something very interesting, new. And the question I wanted to ask you was, you know, when you're talking about, because you know, you were at AAA and then, you know, obviously either you decided to leave or you got released. And now you're thinking about a coaching career. And for our players out there, a lot of pro guys get released. They think, as you said, sometimes they think they know it all because they were in pro ball and theirs is their only way. And advice to guys that are looking for jobs when you're in pro ball, and that doesn't mean college either, because, you know, you might open an academy, you might open a travel team program. And coming out of pro ball, parents can be influenced just because you're a professional athlete, but that doesn't mean you know how to handle young players. Doesn't mean you know how to teach. It means you possibly learned some things, but there's a difference between knowing it and doing it. So advice to pro guys coming out, you know, and looking for jobs, some advice to them how to handle things.
Yeah. Check your ego at the door. You know, you can't just walk in and just cause you played double A or triple A or even got to the big leagues and these kids are just going to think, you know it all. You know, you gotta learn how to build those relationships with those young men. That's extremely important. Trust. We use a word called the word love around our program. You know, these young men today and young women, you know, playing softball, whatever sports they're playing, you know, they yearn for this from their coaches. And I thought, you know, I would just walk in and I didn't have to really, I could just say a couple things and a couple nuggets here and there, but it's about the grind in the batting cage. You know, get in there for 2-3 hours with your guys before practice if you can. But also, build relationships in your region, wherever you're at. If you're in the West Coast, you know, call Coach Lee at Cal Poly San Luis Obispo, call Coach Christensen at Sac State and say, hey, I see you got some camps coming up. Could you use an extra hand? I'm looking to get into the game. And, you know, they'll hire you for no money whatsoever, but go in there and throw batting practice for 3 hours and, you know, just completely check your ego at the door. Understand you're starting from the bottom and you got to work your way up, and it can happen like that.
One of the reasons I want to talk about this next topic, because I think it's important for coaches and players, actually, you know, social media has exploded. You know, you could use it for a positive, you know, even looking for jobs, right? You can possibly put some things on there that, you know, show what you might know about the game. Or you could ask questions, but you could also be negative. And people watch social media, whether you're, you know, players sometimes don't understand that because they're young and, you know, coaches tell them, you know, one, either don't post anything or two, if you're going to post something, wait maybe 24 hours before you post something to make sure you understand what you're posting. Because the coaches like you, when you're recruiting, you're going to look at that. If you're recruiting if a guy's interviewing for a job, aren't you looking at social media? So advice on that.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's, I just had this discussion with my team about a week ago, make sure that they clean up their social media. Cause everybody's going to be watching now, especially, you know, everybody's home and especially coaches and whatnot, but yeah, you know, recruits, it's a way for them to get out. Especially since there's dead periods right now in recruiting. So a lot of coaches can't go off campus and recruit right now. So video is a big asset we have. I go through Twitter and watch videos, all the time. Now, I think the message has gotten through to young kids, especially, young baseball players that I know about, that to clean up their Twitter. It used to be, you know, you turn a young man's Twitter on, it was all music and just them hanging out with their buddies, maybe drinking some beers, things of that nature. But now, at least the ones I'm looking at, it's solely focused on the things that they're focused on. Baseball, working out, a lot of working out videos these days.
Yes.
Lifting weights. But those are the kind of things. But, the message I'd give is just keep it clean. You know, be smart about it. And I always say, if you don't want to read about it in the paper the next day, then you shouldn't post it.
Absolutely. Hey, this is a big one because, you know, the coronavirus now has been, you know, we've been in for like 6 months, and I know different states, different areas, you're NCAA Division II, you've got to recruit, but now do you have players that now are coming back? And so the recruiting process, there's less spots for young people that are coming in, and how's that working out? And what's your advice to seniors, you know, in high school, what they should be doing?
Yeah, no, it's a tough time right now. We have 9 seniors coming back out of 12.
Wow.
I see it as a positive. You know, they're very good players. You know, all coaches love having veterans in their program. It is tough for our incoming freshmen that are going through the fall right now. Obviously, we're virtual this fall. We're not on campus, so we haven't been on the field. But if we were on the field, you know, everybody would get an equal amount of playing time, but you know, guys know, the players know, you know, your senior catcher is back and he's an all conference catcher. He's most likely going to be your starting catcher moving forward. But, the class that I feel like it's really hurting is this next class coming in. It's unfortunate. It's tough. There's options. They got junior college route. They've got, they can take a gap year, things of that nature, work on their strength, their speed, all that, the agility. I think they should play. I think if you're not going to go to a 4-year right away, definitely go to a JC and play. It'd be tough to take a gap year and get back into it. Mm. But kids are getting creative with it. The NCAA is going to have some serious issues figuring things out if they don't play this spring. And I mean, that's way down the road, but can you imagine two classes now behind? Yeah. Wow. So, what I would tell young kids out there is be patient. We're in a dead period for recruiting. Division II, we just got out of it, so we can actually go off and recruit now. But the Division I's aren't allowed to be out there right now. Don't panic. Send your videos. Study the schools that you're interested in. Reach out to these coaches. Schools are starting to open up now, so they might be able to start having camps at their campuses. Invest your money in those. The biggest thing is don't have a pity party. I've told my team that, the pity party's over. It's time to just keep working. That's all you can do in life. Just keep working hard. And, things eventually and trust and things will turn around.
Yeah, and one of the things that's caused in these times has caused us to be is, and includes me in this, to be creative, make adjustments, figure out new ways. You called it a gap year. Maybe if you're forced to do a gap year, maybe there's a place you can still play. It may not be a college, you may be going to school, but you can play somewhere during that time, because I know there's programs that, people making adjustments, so they're trying to figure out new things to do. Well, there's another new thing. Now you start a team that plays during that time, so that way that player has that playing experience. Being creative, you've had to do that now because your players, you're doing some things on Zoom. Just ideas, how you keeping your players active and interested and, motivated and all that.
Yeah, it was easier up in the beginning of the summer. We were doing trivia night. The guys are coming in. I had 50 trivia questions. We split between pitchers and position players, and it got competitive. They want to compete. So, but then I started noticing somewhere around July, August, they're starting to get zoomed out a little bit. So I cut back a little bit on the Zooms. And then what I decided to do with the fall, I think it's working really well, is I got 40 plus guys in the program right now coming in the fall. I picked 10 leaders and I call them my leadership group. And each leader has 4 players underneath them. So I've got 10 little pods, if you will. Mm. And I spread them out, make sure that some of the younger guys are with the older guys and things of that nature. And every other Monday, I meet on a Zoom with my leadership group, my 10 leaders. And I teach them an aspect of leadership. So right now I'm teaching them out of the Urban Meyer book, Above the Line.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's a fantastic book, fantastic lessons in there. And I think it's very pertinent to what is going on in today's world. You got to have an above the line mentality, not a below the line mentality, which is pessimism, complaining, making excuses. Above the line is, finding a way to get things done. And then there's some other aspects in there I'm going to teach them throughout the fall. But I teach my leadership group every other Monday night for about 45 minutes. And then we talk. Then we have a session of talking about, what's going on in their lives, how they feel we can make things better with the team right now. Cause I'm always learning from my players. I mean, if you're not a learner and as well as a teacher, you're not going to make it in this game. It's been fantastic. And then, they take what I've given them and then they got 2 weeks till we meet again to reach their 4 players. So I'm reaching all my players through my leaders throughout the fall. And then they get back to me and tell me how team morale is and when they check in with these guys, it's not just about leadership. It's about their academic, what's going on in school, about their mental health, making sure that things are okay, mentally and physically. And then their workouts, we're doing a Zoom workout. So I know it's a long-winded answer, but the leadership groups has been fantastic for the fall.
No, that's great. I love to hear it, especially the more we listen to people who understand leadership. And I was going to ask about the leadership when it comes to the regular season. How do you handle your players, your seniors, juniors, freshmen? Who are the leaders? Do you have team leaders? Do you have captains? Everybody has a different philosophy in this. How do you do it?
Yeah, I don't name captains. I think captains kind of just kind of come about. They present themselves throughout practice and throughout mm-hmm. games. I listen to my players quite a bit. I will tell you this, Pete, it took some time for me to understand that as a coach. Because when I came in, I was fiery. I was gung-ho. Yeah. It was my way or the highway, you know?
Well, that's you know, in the old days, that's the way it was. I mean, you know, when I played, you know, your coach told you to do this, and that's what you did.
Absolutely. You know, as you know, I got in there 5 years ago to SS State as the head coach. And, you know, I had all these ideas how we're going to turn this program into a winning program. And we're going to win. And, and I realized quickly, you know, it was going to be a long road. It was going to be a journey. But we didn't turn the corner until I finally 100% trusted my leaders, my players. And, you know, and started having, you know, one-on-one meetings weekly with them in my office, phone calls at night, like just checking in, how you doing? Because you can get so busy in your world of show up in the office, crank out your emails, meet with your AD, get to practice, get to weights, go home. And you get in that regimen and what the thing I learned from my players was they didn't want that monotonous, you know, sequence every day. They wanted to change in practice. So like, I mean, the simplest thing of, I added music to practice and not just BP, Pete, like we have music throughout the entire 3 hours.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's faint because if we're doing a bunt defense or something, you know, they need to be able to hear me, but, or the catcher or whatnot. But, you know, it brought rhythm to practice. Guys are getting ground balls and we got a little bit of, you know, rap going, and that took some time because I'm a country music guy, so I had to be changed on that one, the music. But but you know, little things like that, starting the day off with BP. I mean, I'd say 90% of the coaches watch this right now probably end practice with BP.
Mm-hmm.
We all do it, right? We show up, we stretch, we throw, we do our team our individuals, our team defenses, and then we go into BP and we go home. You know, sometimes we show up and the coaches are there and we've already set BP up and the guys are fired up. They get to hit first, you know, little things like that. And I got that from one of my seniors 1 year.
Love it. Yeah. What about when, you know, you're always going to, you know, they're around each other a long time, you know, that's a long season some ways, you know, not as much as pro ball, but what about when there's an issue that arises, you know, not a good issue, obviously, how do you address that? Is that addressed by the players, the coaches? Who handles all that?
Yeah. You know, it's in-house to start, but you know, if I feel like it's something that the athletic director needs to know about, you know, obviously I'll talk to the athletic director so she's not, blindsided by something, a phone call or something, but, you know, most of the stuff I talk about the guys, it's in-house, but the way I attack it is that I tell the guys, listen, when you're growing up in your family, was everything perfect? Or did you have arguments with your brother, your sister, your mom, your dad, your grandparents? There was always an issue, you know, within your family, but you fixed it because you loved each other, right? And nothing was was bigger than your family. Mm. And so we're a family, and we're gonna fight. I mean, I remember once that a right fielder didn't make a play, and a second baseman gave him wasn't happy about it, and bad body language on the field, or said something, right? Well, before they got to the dugout, you know, it was about to go on. And, you know, a couple guys broke it up. This was about 3-4 years ago. And I said to them, listen, you fight with your brother. You know, I fought with my brother growing up my whole life, you know, about whatever it may be. And, so that's how I attack it, is we're a family. Nothing's bigger than our family. We're going to have issues, but we're going to solve it.
Yeah, I like that. I mean, you know, we talked about it last night on the show also, and that's why I bring it up again, because getting different perspectives is very interesting. One of the, you know, if you have a player, an example, I remember Matt Noakes played for us with the Flyers, and he told me a story about, you know, one time when he was young, you know, I think he didn't hustle a ball out, or I don't remember exactly the situation. Well, guess who met him at the steps was Derek Jeter, you know, and Jeter explained to him, we don't do that. You know, we're Yankees. If you have a kid, let's just say, you know, cause everybody has a bad day. You hit a ball, he's your third hitter, and he doesn't hustle it out. Which I just saw last night or yesterday in the, one of the major league games, and the announcer brought it up. It was a close play. The guy slowed down twice and they need to be in the playoffs. You know, how do you address an issue like that?
Yeah, you know, honestly, early in my career, I would have confronted him, and I would have made a scene, and you know, and that's part of, like, I want everybody in the stands to know that, you know, I see it all the time with coaches. when you confront a player and embarrass them, it's more about yourself. Like, you want everybody there to know that you didn't teach them to do that. And you got to get away from that as a coach. You know, you got to take them in the dugout, in the corner, whatever it may be, and explain to them. Maybe the first time you explain to them, listen, this is not how we do it here. When you don't hustle, you're representing not only yourself, but this program and your teammates. You've let your teammates down. Now, it happens again after that talk. He's usually gone out, you know, out of the lineup, you know, probably has to earn his way back in the lineup. But to Jeter's point, if you've built your program and you have leaders, you can, you know, last year we had amazing leadership. I think we did have a freshman that didn't run a ball out. And I remember Jonah Gonzalez, our fifth year senior center fielder, one of the best players in the league. He could see I was fired up and he came over to me and says, Coach, I got it. I got him.
Yeah. See, and you know, even players, you were a player, you know, when you did something you shouldn't have done, yeah. You know, sometimes I see some coaches are pretty good at it. They'll kind of give the guy a look, you know, and the kid will give him a nod because he understands I screwed up. It won't happen again. Yeah. You know, sometimes it's tough. It's not easy, but it's developing, you know, leaders, it's developing individuals, human beings for the real life, because if they think baseball's tough, wait till they get to the real life. We all found that out the hard way. But, you know, you talked about different styles that throughout the years you changed. It'd be interesting to know what else as a coach, Tony Schifani, being Italian, I know I'm a hothead at times. What have you changed? What else have you changed for the better that you saw throughout your career that you needed to change? Because that kind of could speed up the process with some coaches out there.
Yeah, absolutely. If you get the opportunity to be a head coach, what you've got to do is you got to delegate. I try to do everything the first couple of years. And, you know, you just can't do it. You run yourself thin and you're leaving something away. You're not getting everything done you need to get done. But trusting your assistant coaches, you know, I get asked all the time, like, by these young coaches that become a head coach, whether it's a high school or, you know, a JC, whatever it may be. Hey, what's some advice you got? I always tell them the number one advice is put time and effort into your assistant, who you're going to hire for your assistant coach. Because you have to trust that person as much as you trust yourself, to the point where you can trust that if you're not there that day, everything's going to get done. You know, I can go recruit a JC in San Mateo or something, knowing my assistant coach, Cameron Rowland, is going to run practice smoothly and get everything done that I expect to get done that day. So, but yeah, delegating is definitely something that last 3 to 4 years I've really worked on. And what it does, it allows your assistant coaches to grow too. They all have aspirations to be head coaches. And if you don't let them grow and let them make mistakes, I'll give you an example. I hired a young man this past year to be our volunteer catching coach. And he did a fantastic job with the catchers. But in the fall, this is his past year, obviously. In the fall, I started throwing him at third base in the third base box during intersquads because I wanted to see how he reacted. And I was thinking about, for the first time, running the offense from the dugout. I'd always been in the third base box come springtime. And he was awesome. But I wouldn't have known that if I didn't throw him out there. So, and we started the spring. We played 22 games in the spring, even with COVID. He was our third base coach in his first year, volunteer coaching in college. And I'll tell you what, he was fired up. He was asking questions every day and about positioning. And I mean, you've coached third base, I'm sure.
Yep.
It's not, they're it's
very
not
difficult
in the world. Yeah.
And you know, think about it, third base, you know, once a guy gets thrown out, especially, it's always, you know, everybody's looking at you, right? It's, yeah. It's yeah. Like, so it's almost like an umpire. You have to start perfect and end perfect. And it's impossible at times because it's not easy. Well, now that brings up a good point because here's what I want to discuss. Now you're in the dugout, because I think that's interesting, you know, because you see some college coaches like to be a third, some in the dugout. Give the perspective of why you like being in the dugout, if that's the case. What are some of the reasons you like being in the dugout?
Two things, 100%. One was we were having trouble when, you know, say we were down 3 runs, right, in the seventh. And I'm in the third base box, and we put a 5 spot up, and we're still hitting. And I got my pitching coach across the field trying to get my attention, like, who, lefty, righty, who do you want to pin? And, you know, so that's an issue. So I like being right next to my pitching coach. We can talk strategy during the game, get guys hot. And then I love the opportunity to talk to the hitters as they're on deck. I try to see situations that are going to be coming up, you know, runner on second, nobody out. I got a certain hitter up. I got this guy on deck. I'll walk over to him and say, listen, we're probably going to bunt him over here. You know, and then they're going to play the infield in. You know, you look for a pitch elevated, put the ball in the outfield. You know, and that's all the things you want to say as a coach from the box, but you can't.
Right. So being in a dugout really helps. And being a college coach, I want to get your perspective on this. What about, because you hear this, and I've seen it, you know, some of the teams I take around the world, because most of them are U.S. kids. Two things. Are you seeing more kids that don't know the game, can't play it on their own? And obviously you're not recruiting those kids, but so it may not be your kids because you're recruiting. And we're going to get into what kind of player you recruit. But, you know, kind of studying the game more, understanding the game, thinking ahead, kind of thinking ahead a little bit like a coach, you know, making decisions on their own a little bit. If your kids are pretty good at that, when you're out there recruiting, you see that issue out there?
You do. You see a lot of mistakes. Like, you know, you sit in the stands and you're watching a game. And you're like, God, why do you go first to third there? Make the first out at third, things of that nature. I hear coaches say that. Excuse me. I hear people say that quite a bit. Like, kids don't know the game anymore. You know, it's all showcase baseball.
Right.
And, yeah, there's probably an aspect of that. And I'm not going to sit here and say there's no aspect of it. It is what it is. Most of the tournaments we go to in Arizona now, they don't keep score. You know, it's four batters per inning. You know, they leave a guy on second base because they got to do a switch.
Right.
And two outs. I want to see that guy hit with two outs and a runner on second. You know, I want to see that shortstop make that play in the hole with two outs and a runner on second. So that part of the game has been lost a little bit, and you have to teach it. You know, I was taught by a coach years ago that you cannot as a head coach, or as any coach actually, get mad at your player for something they did if you didn't teach it in practice.
Yeah.
You can't assume they know everything, you know. Absolutely. And, you know, the one thing that surprises me, Pete, with kids today, this is the one thing I'm really shocked about, is they don't watch baseball as much as we used to. Mm. And they have more access to it than ever.
Yes.
You know, we had WGN, the Cubs, TBS, right. Braves, right. As kids, and then the game of the week.
Yeah.
You know, after This Week in Baseball was on in the morning.
Now it's everywhere.
Yeah, now, you know, there's apps. You can watch every game possible, but they just don't watch because there's so many other things to do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's how I learned the game, by watching.
And that leads to the recruiting aspect, because I want you to talk to, whether it be high school coaches and parents and players, NCAA Division II, type of player you're looking for. You know, everybody's going to give you the obvious a lot of times, but, you know, I'm trying to look at some of the things that you kind of look for that others may not look for all the time. Give us some ideas of the type of players you're looking for, you know, on and off the field.
Here's the obvious. We're looking for good athletes that have good arms, that can run fast, hit the ball hard, right?
Sure.
And play catch. Okay, so we're going to showcase, all us coaches are looking at the exact same 15 players. Okay, we can all identify those guys. So what's the intangibles? How do you figure out the difference? And a lot of it has to do with the on-campus visit. I will never make an offer to a player without bringing them on campus and spending time with them and their family. I want to see how they interact with mom and dad. I will tell you this. At UC Davis, we had a top recruit come visit with his family. And, you know, the head coach and I at the time were walking the young man around, and he was checking his cell phone the entire time. You know, had the down in his pocket, looking at it. He was rude to his mom at one point. And the head coach and I got a moment together alone, and we both said, we're out. We're out on this kid. We don't want this kid in our program. You know, so that the on-campus visits can tell you a lot. Do they look you in the eye? Do they keep their cell phone off the whole trip, the whole visit? Things of that nature are really important. But on the field stuff, I talked to a lot of coaches, you know, that not only their coaches, because sometimes their coaches are biased. You know, they want to promote their players. But I talk to their opponents. I try to talk to as many as three or four coaches that have competed against them and guys I trust. You know, what kind of player is he? Is he a turd on the field? You know, does he compete his tail off? Things of that nature. But I read a Roy Williams book once. He's the basketball coach.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting story. He asked every recruit when they come on their visit one question that is consistent, and the answer tells them a lot. And the question is, he has that player in front of him with their family, and he'll say, tell me about your greatest basketball moment so far in your life. And the answer is telling. And in his book, he talks about, you know, you'll get the young man, and he'll say, oh, coach, 2 weeks ago, I did this 180, 360 dunk, brought the house down. And, you know, it was epic. But nothing in that answer was about winning or about his teammates. It was about him. And then you'll have the young man, Jock, I don't know if you remember Jock Vaughn, played for him at Kansas, point guard. And his answer was, oh, coach, I made the team as a junior, as a point guard. And we were a middle of the road pack team, and we ended up going to the state title 2 years in a row and celebrating with my teammates. The last 2 years has been my greatest moment.
Wow. Love that.
And it's interesting, you know, the difference in answers. And that guy won a national title for him at Kansas.
Yes.
You know, it helped win a national title. So I sometimes ask recruits that, tell me your greatest baseball moment, just out of curiosity, you know, how they answer.
Love it. And that goes back to, well, I'm sure, you know, I want to ask you about this because I know here in Chicago, you know, the Cubs have always said, they recruit character. I don't care if he's the number one draft pick. They've skipped number one, gone to the second or third guy in the first round because of character. And character seems to be so important because once you have these character guys, that quality guys, they care about, like you said, care about other players, care about winning, care about, you know, getting the job done. Everything else kind of builds itself into that, you know, culture that you're talking about. I mean, how important is character there?
It's very important, Pete. The thing I love about Division II is Division I recruiting has gotten so early in the process. I mean, their schools are committing, especially on the West Coast, they're committing freshmen and sophomores.
Yeah.
Sometimes eighth graders.
Yes.
Now, there's no top sophomore that's going to commit to a Division II at this point. It usually doesn't happen. So we're recruiting young men when they're in their senior year. Their summer before the senior year, and then in their senior fall and things like that. So you get time to get to know these young men as in Division II, which I love. And then we're recruiting junior college players. And, you know, they've matured a little bit over the last 2 years in junior college. I will pass on a young man if I don't feel like it's good character, because we have worked extremely hard, my coaching staff and I, in the last 4 or 5 years to build the program around good character young men. I tell people all the time, you know, the thing I'm the most proud of, Pete, in the last 5 years, and this is no BS in anybody, is I'm proud that we've gone to the CCAA tournament, first time in school history. We've won 25-plus games, things of that nature. That's all great. But the thing I'm the most proud of is our graduation rate is in the upper 90%. And number two, our team GPA went from, I believe when I got here, it was in the mid-2s. We were at 3.1 this past year as a team. Yeah. And, you know, I think that translates to the field.
Absolutely. And then as you said, you know, it's interesting. The story you talked about how, the son treats their mom or dad and, you know, and unfortunately, you know, we all know this, parents have a lot to do because, you know, they're growing their kids up. If you're growing them wrong, you know, in the wrong direction, you know, that's going to reflect later on when coaches try to look for players. You also said this, I thought was interesting. You talk to other high school coaches or other travel team coaches rather than that coach that, you know, has the player.
Along with.
Yeah. So the question is this, because it happens in Midwest quite a bit. I hear it a lot as an outsider. I hear college coaches aren't talking to the high school coach as much. They're talking more to the travel coach. They're going more to showcases. We know why they're going to showcases. I mean, I know that, right? It saves money. I get it. And you get to see everybody there. That makes a whole lot of sense. And that doesn't mean it's across the board in college baseball. It's just that some of the criticism we're hearing here in the Midwest. What do you guys, how do you guys handle that?
Yeah, I think each coach is different. I do both. I do travel ball and high school. I try to talk to as many coaches that have seen that young man play as possible. Sometimes you can only talk to a high school coach. The young man doesn't play in a travel ball team, or sometimes the high school coach doesn't get back to you, and all you have to talk to is the travel ball coach. Things of that nature. But I put value on those conversations. But the thing I put the most value on is when I bring that young man to campus. And another great thing about Division II, Pete, is You can't do this in Division One. When we bring a young man on a recruiting visit, we have 2 hours to he can participate with our players in a practice. So if he's a hitter, he's going to take BP with our guys. Ah. He's going to stretch, and there's paperwork you have to fill out and all that. But it's fantastic to watch these young high school kids with these college guys, and you know sometimes they're really nervous, and sometimes guys feel really comfortable. And my players will come to me and say, "Coach, I really like this kid. You got to work hard here." Or they'll say, "Nah, coach, not one fit in, coach."
Interesting. Yeah, I love that person. Never heard that about college baseball. I think that's something new. What about when Tony goes to, or your recruiting coordinator goes to games? You're hyped up about certain guys. You're looking at certain players. You already know ahead of time. But there's been something that turns you off about players. What is that something that can turn you off and about players?
Body language during the game is huge for me. You know, if it's a pitcher and he's umpire squeezing him or whatever it may be, he's giving up some hits, teammates are making errors behind him, just watching his body language can tell me everything. If he doesn't show anything and he just keeps competing, that's the kind of guy I want. You know, it's definitely body language. Guy strikes out. Does he come to dugout and drop an F-bomb? Biggest thing for me is when a guy makes a third out, at like say he grounds out to short, I can't stand when guys just throw their helmet and make their coach pick it up 20 feet away. And, you know, as they walk to their position, things like that. I watch that, you know, obviously I want the guys I'm recruiting to go 4 for 4 and, you know, and make me feel good about us recruiting them. But sometimes it's even better. They go 0 for 4 just to see how they're react.
You know, and that's a big deal because, you know, baseball is a game of failure, unfortunately. You can look at it however you want, but you're going to fail more times statistically most of the time, at least in hitting. And how you deal with that failure is so important. You know, what do you teach your guys? Because no matter what, they're going to fail. Just because they made it to college baseball doesn't mean they're going to be successful during that season. Dealing with failure, how do you work on that with your players?
Yeah, we don't talk a lot about how much failure there is in the game. I try to keep it a little more positive with them, like, you know, all the things that they're doing right. But little things that we do in practice to get them away from the fear of failure is when we inter-squad, they all have the green light at first base or second base to steal, and they're expected to steal within the first two pitches. If they're thrown out, I put them back at first. It's not an out. It's just that whatever happened at the plate, it's the ball or strike. That's – the count changes, whatever. And then they get back at first and maybe I'll walk over there and go, "Hey, you need an extra step in your lead," or, you know, "Get a little better jump here. You know, he's a C on UCLA, you know, things of that nature." And so I take away the fear of failure with that, because so many times guys get thrown out and then they never want to run again.
Right.
Yeah. You know, little things like that, but you know, we discuss it, but we talk a lot about self-talk, making it positive, how many opportunities you get in a season, being prepared, and that stuff will take care of the failure.
Absolutely. Love to hear that. What about you got a bad day, bad game, you know, how does Tony handle that? You know, for coaches out there that are either working with young kids or even, you know, college guys or high school, you know, how do you handle that situation after the game?
Yeah, it's tough because you have those 5 minutes after a game where you have them right field, right? And that's probably the most impressionable moments you're going to have the rest of the day with them. And I try to stay as positive as I can. I used to go through a laundry list of things that, like, 10 things that went on, like learning points of the game.
Right.
And sometimes I catch myself, I'm only in the third inning of stuff I got to go through. And I got guys looking past me at their parents, you know, they're thinking about. So I've limited those meetings to 2 to 3 minutes. I focus on a couple really good things. If there's something that was glaring, like effort, I will never bring up like a certain error or strikeout or anything like that. But I'll talk about, "Hey guys, we weren't prepared for this situation. That's my fault. This week in practice, we'll address it." But there has to be a little more self-preparation before games, a little more focus before pitch one. Because what I've noticed is a lot of the mistakes that are made are early in a game. For me, that's just not focused before the game starts. And, you know, that first ball is hit at you and you're not ready for that. You know, I remember my rookie year, I was with the Marlins. And, I'm blanking on his name, but he was the field coordinator, a legend. And, Bolsey.
John Bolles.
John Bolles.
Chicago guy, sure.
As intense as a human being as there is, right?
And by the way, everybody knows John Bolles, you know, managing the big leagues.
Yes, he did.
I mean, in those days, it was almost impossible to get a pro job unless you, you know, you were a big league guy. And he made it all the way as a manager. Great. Go ahead.
I've never learned so much baseball in my life from one person than John Bolles. And I was a free agent signing. So, you know, those first, second, third rounders all around me in rookie ball. And he made a point to personally invite me in front of the team to instructional league at the end of the season, which was a big deal. You know, top recruits got invited to instructional league. Mm-hmm. And I was feeling pretty good. I show up in Florida for instructs, and we're playing our first game. And, you know, the first ball was 10 feet to my left. And, you know, I made an effort, didn't get it. And we end up playing the game. And after the game, John Bolles sat with everybody and he went over the game. He went over inning by inning. And first thing he says is, we have a shortstop that wasn't ready on pitch one.
Wow.
I mean, just a gut check. And from that moment forward, I was ready on pitch one at the rest of my career.
And during the game, were there a couple shortstops that played or just only you?
Yes. Yeah. No, there was a couple, but he made it clear.
Didn't mention names.
He didn't mention names, right? Yeah. But he did not do.
Yeah, right. For you. But, you know, well, no, I kind of like that because I bring that up because you're not going right after that one player only. You know, he knows who it is. Everybody else might know who it is also. But still, I like the way they approach that. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, that was it. So, you know, I've taken that approach with – I'll never call out certain guys by name. You know, I'll say, if we run that ball out in the third inning, you know, maybe it's a closer game. And they'll you can see them thinking –
Yeah, who's you know, because at the same time you're teaching the whole team. You know, it's kind of like when working with young kids, you know, you're working with, let's say, 13-year-olds, they're playing catch. You know, certain guys aren't gonna do certain things right, but if you keep harping on that same person all the time, you know, they're just going to feel like you're going after them. But if you kind of address that issue with everybody and say, hey, take a look at how you're doing this with your arm, that way everybody looks at their arm, then everybody's learning also at the same time. So I love that approach. Hey, we got about 5 more minutes. I know you're a pretty busy guy. Want to get your perspective on baseball in general, but from a development standpoint, because I'm big on long-term development, getting kids to play the game, staying the game longer and all that. But a general perspective of developing in the game, what would you like to see maybe some changes in the game to help create better development in the long run for kids?
Yeah, that's a tough question. But I mean, for me as a coach, it's more teaching fundamentals. You know, I get a player and probably 90% of my players have no idea how to bunt. I mean, they don't even know where to put their hands. You know, on a bunt. I've had some kids, they put their hands together like this. I mean, it's incredible. You know, obviously with launch angle and all the analytics going on in the game today. And, you know, and the thing that hurts me watching Major League Baseball is all the strikeouts and the players just don't seem to care. You know, I'm a Dodger fan. I grew up in Southern California and I love the Angels and Dodgers and they have the best record in baseball, but they have to be in the top 5 in the MLB in strikeouts. I mean, I love Bellinger and those guys, but they swing and miss more than I've ever seen anything. Mm. And you know, it's tough to watch, but that's what kids are growing up watching right now, you know, and that's how coaches are coaching it. And, you know, coaches are getting certified these days on how to teach a launch angle. And the bottom line is a swing already has launch angle in it. You know, because the ball's coming.
Absolutely.
So anyhow, but the fundamentals for me, you know, just squaring a baseball up when you catch a ground ball, boom, chest, funnel, you know, get rid of it. You know, you watch a young man like Javier Baez, which is a fantastic talent, but God gave him 100-mile-per-hour arm, you know, and he'll pat his glove like three times before he gets rid of it. And, you know, and you see kids doing it today, but, you know, that's the biggest thing for me is the fundamentals, this, footwork, knowing how to bunt, understanding the game, the ins and outs of the game. You know, I was fortunate. I hope I don't run over here, Pete, but I got,
no, you're good. You're good. No, the time is more for you, not for me.
Oh,
I've got more
I'm good.
Time.
Yeah, I'm good. No, I got to meet Coach Garrido a couple years ago, Augie Garrido. And, you know, I think one of the greatest coaches in the history of college baseball or any baseball. And, you know, his first year coaching was San Francisco State in 1969. Mm. And I spent some time with him and introduced myself a couple years ago, and we had lunch in Newport Beach together. And I mean, I sat there for 3 hours, just listening to him talk. It was unbelievable. I invited him to come up and speak to my team at our banquet, and he obliged. He came up, and I 6 months later, he came up and spoke to our team and, at a huge banquet. I mean, he didn't have to do that for me. He didn't know me at all. And he's a Titan and a Longhorn through and through. And, but spending so much time with him, what he talked about was how his focus was and what he taught the kids on how to win an inning, And you got 9 opportunities to win the innings. And, if you can win, you know, 4 to 5 innings a game, you know, in pitch and play defense, you're going to win a lot of baseball games. And that includes the bunt. You know, he was a big believer in sacrificing yourself. And it wasn't about just getting a guy in scoring position. It was all about your teammates seeing that you're willing to sacrifice yourself for the betterment of the team. And I think that's lost a little bit today, especially with showcase baseball.
You know what? I'm so happy you brought up the fundamental aspect of the game, because, you know, it's getting so technical out there that, you know, it's mind-boggling sometimes. You know, and a great example, and first of all, yeah, to get a chance to visit with Augie Garrido, boy, what a great opportunity, a legend in the game. You mentioned bunting. We'll just take that example. I know programs at the younger levels that don't even bunt anymore because they figure – well, they're not going to use it anyways when they get older. Where they fail is what you just said. I mean, in college baseball, they still bunt. It's about winning. Okay. If you got to move a guy over, if you got to squeeze a guy, whatever you have to do. I mean, I'm starting to see it a little bit in the big leagues. Just in the last few days, I saw 2 or 3 bunts for a hit, you know, move a guy over. And I get the percentage part. But what we're failing at is that's part of the game. If we're not teaching it, you know, that could be a difference of sometimes in college baseball. And when you're picking players, you got a kid that's fundamentally strong and another kid that is less fundamental, you know, maybe can't bunt, can't do certain things. You got to make a decision to pick guys. So I love that you talk about that with the bunting aspect.
Yeah. You see it in Major League Baseball more because of the extra inning rule, putting a runner on second in the extra innings. I mean, I don't know if that rule is going to apply to the playoffs. I haven't read anything about that yet. Are they going to do that in extra innings in the postseason?
No.
No, okay. I was going to say it'd be interesting if it came down to a World Series Game 7 and their innings and what team can get the guy over or not. I mean, it'd be really interesting.
Absolutely. That'd be a tough one. I agree with you.
And here's the thing, Pete. I don't want to sit here and say that we bunt every inning we get a guy on base, you know, and because I'm very honest with my recruits. Like, I let you guys swing the bat. We're an aggressive team. We steal a lot. I'm putting you guys in positions to drive the ball in the gap. We teach hit doubles. But – it's a big but. We do practice a short game because when we need it in the sixth, seventh, eighth inning, it's there.
Absolutely.
In your back pocket.
Yeah. And that's good for everybody to understand, because that's why younger teams should be working on it. And one of the things, you know, people say it's easy to bunt. Well, but, you know, there's a lot of bunting too, and the ball's coming pretty hard, or it might be a breaking ball, whatever it is. Is there anything else in the game before we kind of close off? When you talk fundamentals, do you see – lack in fundamentals in certain areas that maybe can help our younger coaches understand you need to work on this more?
Yeah, the routine ground ball. I think the routine, that's my biggest pet peeve as a coach. If we don't make the routine play, we hammer away at it in practice. You know, I mean, how many times in a game is the play in the six hole where the Jeter throw, right? that might happen once in a game. And Tatis is the only guy that can make that. Him and Baez.
Right, him and Baez.
So why practice? Why hit all these balls in the six hole all the time? You know, I have my guys practice those plays during BP. You know, it's hard to emulate with a fungo, but in BP, you could practice that play. Mm. They take their fungos in BP, then they have a round where they're just taken live off the bat. And, that's a big thing. It's just the emphasizing the routine play on the infield, that's huge. But with pitching, what I'm seeing quite a bit, though, is obviously it's velocity, right? Everybody wants to throw harder and harder. For me, it's still a game of commanding the zone, throwing strikes. I'll take that guy that's 86 to 89 with a little movement and pounds the zone over that guy that's 92, 93 that can't hit the side of a fence, side of a barn. But, I want guys that are going to keep my infielders engaged in the game, keep my outfielders engaged by throwing strikes, the ball's put in play, keep their pitch counts down, and give ourselves a chance to win every game.
Folks, and I keep saying, I know I say the word, coaches, tell coaches some advice and everything, but don't forget, there's a responsibility a player has also in making themselves better because, even at the younger levels, they may not have a chance to practice as much, and we're always blaming the coach. Well, but, the player's got a responsibility. You want to get better. You've got to work at it. What's your message there to young players?
100%. I see these kids dump thousands and thousands of dollars into showcases left and right. And then I get the emails from kids, what showcases should I attend and sign up for? I tell them, listen, invest in yourself, invest in a strength coach, invest in a running coach, an agility coach, right? Put yourself in a position when you do go to those showcases that you're noticed, that your ability is noticed, your athleticism is noticed. Cause you show up at a showcase and there's 200 kids and you haven't done any work on yourself. You're not going to stand out, and a great example is this weekend. I know it's a different sport, but if you're a golfer, you saw DeChambeau, the guy that won the US Open.
I saw it briefly on TV. Yeah.
Yeah. So in September, he made a change to his body. This is pre-COVID, but he made a change in his game and his body. He wasn't winning. He was just competing the last few years. And he decided to get in the weight room. He added 30 pounds of muscle. And he shortened golf courses basically, but he also continued to work on his short game, his putting, all that stuff, the science of the game and whatnot. And he's put himself in a position. Then COVID hit and they weren't having any tournaments. And he continued to work on his own when nobody was looking, right? And here he is, a US Open champion 9 months later. If you put the work in, you'll get the results at some point.
Love it. And, think about it. You're a young kid. You could always go outside. Nobody's out there in your backyard. Throw the ball off the wall. There's a lot of things we did when we were young. And I don't want to go back and say, hey, geez, when we were young, we did this. But, you could practice so much on your own. You really don't – there's no excuse that you can't get better. If your backhand's not very good, I'm assuming you can throw a ball against the wall and just work on your backhand. Even if you don't have a coach, your body's going to figure it out sooner or later. It may take you a little longer.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I've always said this, Pete, and one of my minor league coaches told me this. He said, Tony, I'll give you advice. I'll give you tips. I'll give you nuggets, but you are your best coach. You can only feel what you feel. And that's why there's so many different stances in professional baseball, right? At home plate, there's not that one stance everybody does. As a hitter, as an infielder, when you have to get your feet ready, pre-pitch, things of that nature. I never look into cloning anybody, Pete. I just give guys an opportunity to understand what I think feels right and gets them prepared. But then I tell them, be yourself out there. Be you. Just do you.
All right. Great way to end it. I think that's a great comment, Tone. And first of all, thanks for being on the show. Second of all, great catching up, man. We got to stay in touch now, man. We got to do it because it's important. It's been a long time.
My pleasure. I appreciate it. Hopefully, something of value is out there. And if there's any young coaches out there, look my email up. My cell number is on the website. I love to spend some time on the phone with anybody, any questions, advice they need, and just shoot the crap about baseball.
Matter of fact, this is probably the best time to do it anyways, right?
All right.
Give it, yeah. So, folks, we're going to put Tony's stuff on the show notes. We'll get it, email everything, but you can go to the website. We'll put the San Francisco State website on there. You know, nowadays you can just Google it and goes right to it. So it's perfect. He's got everything up there. So again, special thanks to Tony Schifano. Appreciate it. Special thanks to Brian Crock, our producer with the Lineup Media Group. Also, don't forget, subscribe. Peter Caliendo on YouTube. That's all we ask. All the shows are free, 100-plus shows. And go to our podcast, baseballoutsidethebox.com. And finally, a special thank you to you in the U.S. and around the world. Thanks for joining us today. I'm your host, Pete Caliendo. Have a great day, and I'll see you on the next show.
This has been Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Listen online at baseballoutsidethebox.com and subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and all major podcast outlets. Join the conversation on Facebook and Twitter. Get all of our podcasts now at lineupmedia.fm.